This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You ready, Mike?
Good. He's doing. That's the thing, though. You always got to be busy doing something else. It's like a thing.
To lead it in, you're like, oh, what's up? Yeah, I'll be ready.
It's
like
a
introduction.
You know? It's a thing the young guys do, you know? They're always in the middle of an interview. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And they like, I'm like, that's all right. I dig it.
Buys breakfast. Day one.
We have a living legend
icon
in the Crew Has It podcast studio right now. We have Omar Epps in the building. An icon. I mean, there's really no introduction you can say now. So thank you for coming in. This is crazy. This is crazy for me.
Thank you.
And he did Good Morning America before this. Like, he didn't have to come over here for the boys. Like, that's
nah,
love.
I did have
that's
to. I gotta come show love, you know what I mean?
Thank you, bro.
We appreciate that.
Thank you, we appreciate it.
No doubt.
Yeah, we get better views than Good Morning America. We're not going to bring that up. I'm just kidding. So, honestly, like, I know your work. I've been watching it forever, but I really just wanted to hear like the full Omar Epps story from you. So, like, where did it begin? Like, what was day one for you in the acting world? You know,
that's a great question, actually. So I'm Brooklyn born and raised. You know, single parent household. Salute to my mom, queen mother, and you know, my grandmother. Hello, grandma. She probably doesn't know what a podcast is.
Now she's watching on YouTube right now. Yeah, she's subscribed.
What part of Brooklyn from, Mommy?
I'm from all over. Everybody claimed when I used to live
from everywhere.
East New York, Flatbush, Crown Heights, Bed-Stuy.
I'm just Brooklyn.
And I always, that's how I moved because, you know, my mother was an educator when I grew up. So we used to move every 2 years, you know, every two, three years. So I get cool with y'all on this block. Then you pick me up, move me over here, and I get cool with them. You know what I mean? Till kind of like I went to high school and then it just kind of all came together. So I was just able to move. But going back to your original question, like, you know, my grandmother was she's an artist. Like, she's a photographer, she's written books, she used to be an educator, you know, and I'm talking about, like, photographer, like she had a dark room in her apartment in Tivoli Towers, and I remember going in there with her, like, what's this, what is this chemical smell, and hanging the pictures up, and all of that. My grandfather was a businessman, but on the side, he was a jazz musician, that was his true passion, you know.
That's fine.
He even played with, I believe, Sarah Vaughan one time at Carnegie Hall, he was, like, a bass player, and so that, you know, I just come from that.
Right.
And my you know, and then for me, my acting hero was Sidney Poitier. Mm-hmm. So when I used to be young, you know, watching this, that's when they had the black and white, I'm aging myself. I'm sorry, folks. TV was in black and white. They didn't have color yet.
Wait, it was?
Yeah. But, you know, watching him, you know, they were making the plays he was doing into films and stuff like that. So combine that with, you know, my mother was an educator, like I said, so I used to read a lot. And I used to really skew towards poetry. So I used to read a lot of poetry. So I'm like 8, 9 years old. I started writing my own poetry at the time. Hip hop is being born. So naturally that sort of went into, well, I could rap too. Or say this person's rap. And this is back in the tape days. You had the boom box with the double joint.
Do you remember like the first person you listened to?
Honestly, for me, that was through my aunts with, like, Sugar Hill Gang. That's when they had, like, the, we call them LPs. So they had the record player, you know, they'd be blowing their trees, and they were supposed to be babysitting me, you know, but they were teenagers, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm, like, a little kid, and I'm listening to all of that, and only certain radio stations would play it at a really late.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you had to sneak to do that. Right. And the only place I could do that was at my aunt's.
You had to catch a song on the radio. Like, you had to catch it. Like, there's no, like, oh, I want to hear this
it
right now.
It hit different when you had to catch it on the radio. Because like, now I can't miss this any song whenever.
Exactly.
But and like, then you're like, oh, it's on, it's on. Yeah.
But see, that passion right there, you know what I mean? It. So for me, it was just like, I don't know, when I combine those two things in terms of, like, Poitier, you know, the poetry was a part of that. And for me, acting became an extension of writing. That's kind of where it was in my mind then, you know, because now I'm starting to read plays and stuff like this. And so when I was in junior high school, this is actually a funny story, in my opinion. When I was in junior high school, we did the play Grease. Mm-hmm. Mm. Nobody knows who's, you know, it's you, right. Junior high school, your kids. We auditioned. In my mind, I'm like going to play the lead.
Right.
And this kid named Errol Graves got the lead. And that was it. I was like, nah, son. Like, I got some role over here. Yeah. But
you
felt
like a bush or something?
It was like, nah, I ain't with this.
Right.
That's how the acting bug bit me out of the spirit of competition. Because at the same time, while all of this is happening, I'm playing, like, Pop Warner football, Pee Wee. So I was always a competitor. And then it just grew from there. And then I got into performing arts. High school, which is a legendary performing arts high school. Yep. It was the first federally funded performing arts high school in the country. Mm. If I'm not mistaken, I think that was under Roosevelt. So it's just this rich history. I mean, when you go through the alma mater, it's insane, right? And so I get into there in 86. The new school was on 66, where it is now, was like half built. Mm-hmm. They were still building it. While we were attending
while
freshman year.
Damn.
And it's just amazing, man. It's where I met my brother Marlon Wayans and Rory Cochran went there. I mean, a lot of people went there.
That's crazy.
You know, Mr. Moody, legendary acting teacher. Mm-hmm. And it was like, honestly, it was like being in a candy store every day. Because you had this, it was like New York is a microcosm of America, right? Like, meaning the melting pot, like all of these different cultures.
Everything is in New York.
And the LaGuardia was like the melting pot of New York. You know what I mean? Because you had like the kids from the Upper East Side that came from, you know, rich homes. You had kids like me that came from, you know, more blue collar.
Like that.
But we all shared talent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We all shared that dream. And so it was dope to just like meet people from different walks of life. And we all pursuing this dream, you know? And,
New York's diversity is just amazing. I ain't gonna lie. The diversity in New York is beautiful.
Where you from?
I'm from Staten Island.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I grew up in Staten Island.
All right. Well, you know, before Wu-Tang, Staten Island was like over there. Right.
People still be talking about Staten Island.
Salute to Staten Island. Like, that's, you know, it's us. It's all us.
See?
Know? But Wu-Tang put it
Without Wu-Tang, Staten Island, it wouldn't have been on the map like how it is now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, shout out to Wu-Tang. And shout out to you for showing love to Staten Island, because not a lot of people do that.
Michael takes pride in that.
Yeah, bro, because they be trying to play with us. Like, come on, bro.
Nah, but I understand what you're saying, because back then, you know, it's all the Five Borough thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The real thing. Mm-hmm. You know, to this day, I could be in Paris. Mm-hmm. If a DJ's like, is Brooklyn in the house? Even if it's just me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to throw
But it's out. Normally like, we strong everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, you could be in the Middle East and somebody say that and you're like, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fact, though. That's a fact.
Right?
Especially if like from New York, you're going to rep it no matter where you are. You're going to rep that.
You smell that?
I think so. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Fresh Ball Fall, baby. Smell Fresh Ball Fall?
Well, it is Fresh Ball Fall, you know what I'm saying? It's not that hot no more, you know what I'm saying? So, you know what I'm saying? You can keep it a little fresh.
We can wear jeans in L.A.
We back from the smooth sack summer, now we in the Fresh Ball Fall. Now, look, it's the season of pumpkin spice, baby. And we making sure your crotch look nice, you know what I'm saying? So, you know what that means. That means sipping some nice cider in the fall breeze.
And using Manscaped products to trim your balls with ease. So the seasons may be changing, but the products?
We ain't going nowhere.
We got the Lawnmower 4.0.
We got the Weed Whacker, ear, nose, any hole you want. You know, you can trim that joint with it. Now listen, they got the liquid formulas. They have you smelling fresh. I mean, what they got? What they got?
They got the shampoo.
The 2-in-1 conditioner, body wash. Finna be smelling good, baby.
And to make things even better, Manscaped is gonna hook you up with boxers and a travel bag just to make sure you could fit it all in one. I don't know why I'm talking like Gary Vee, but make sure your balls are clean.
Listen, all you gotta do is go to manscaped.com, use the promo code CREW, you get 20% off, and you know how I be. I'm going to refrain from swearing, but I'm going to say we do not respect shipping fees. You know what I'm saying?
Shipping around here.
So use the code CREW to get that free shipping.
Don't use any Pete Davidson promo code. Use the promo code CREW.
Listen, baby. No shipping. None of that. Promo code CREW.
So was Grease your first audition ever?
Yeah, because I had to audition for the play, but I was in junior high school. Right. And so, you know, that's when they're like, you know, we like the kids. So just give them this role.
So were you simultaneously auditioning for outside of school stuff, or were you not allowed to during high school?
No. Well, so when I went to high school, so my first official experience on a set with cameras was I did this. Shout out to Adam Davis, by the way. So he was a kid who went to, he was in NYU film school. Mm-hmm. He was doing his senior thesis, which was, I don't know what it is, got a grant to do some film.
Right.
And at the time, this is like I kind of started auditioning like sophomore year-ish to do like commercials and like Unito Negro College Fund commercials. And it was funny because me and Marlon were like thick as thieves, and he would always book the commercials.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So now he's getting a little paper, you know, but we hustling, like we working at the Athlete's Foot, I'm delivering pizzas. I start going on these auditions, you got to pay money to get headshots, and all this other stuff we don't know about, right?
Right.
And so this audition came up for this film called The Green Flash, and it was, hey, this is NYU kid, but it'd be a good experience. There's another actor who's been around for some time. His name is Peter Onorati. He played, the film was about like this Italian mobster who something happened and he had to flee and he was injured, and my character was this homeless kid that lived under the boardwalk in Coney Island.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, wakes up one day and there's this Italian mobster laying there all bloody, you know, and he's like, yo, who are you? And then, you know, he's kind of, this begrudging friendship happens, right?
I want to watch this shit.
So I do that.
What is it called?
The Green Flash.
Putting that shit in
my... Yeah.
I'm putting that in my notes.
My first time. I was only 15.
Damn.
You know, and shortly thereafter, because I actually got out of high school when I was 16. So that next year, it was just like taking the audition more seriously. I'm about to get out of school. What am I going to do? Everybody's talking about going to college. I'm like, yeah, you know, I kind of want to try my hand. I knew what I wanted to do.
Right.
But it was like, back then, it was no take a leap year and all of that.
There was no information back then.
Exactly.
Now, you could just even listen to this podcast and understand a little bit of how the entertainment, like, back then, you couldn't go on Google and figure out how to do it.
You just
got to
jump straight in and just figure it out.
Back then, it still is now, but it was about the relationships,
right.
Especially in New York, because to your point, it's like things weren't, you know, New York was still the Mecca. Like, and Hollywood was Hollywood, but now, I mean, we didn't have all these studios here, so it was like, if you want to make it, you got to go there. But in order to go there, you got to have a name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for yourself first, and then go out there. And so it was crazy, man. The summer I graduated high school, I booked Juice. And at the same time, Marlon ended up going to Howard. He booked Mo Money.
Yep.
You know, and then it's like it just started rolling.
Juice. Right.
You know, and the thing was, now going back to the competitive thing, and y'all guys know how it is, like, you know, back then you walk into a space like this, you got an audition, there's like 30 dudes lined up.
You like
that they look like you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And you know certain dudes only from auditions, like, oh, my man,
I seen him before.
Like,
damn, he book a lot. I like that.
He walking out wishing him luck and shit. And they're like, nah, fuck that. I need this shit.
You had the other dudes. Clearly, you're trying to memorize these lines. They want to now. They want to talk. Like, come on, dog.
You see me trying to lock in. You trying to distract me.
You know what I'm saying?
You already off book.
And Broadway, I mean, Broadway is still Broadway, but that was like a big thing, especially coming from a performing arts high school. Like, it's like, you got to do Broadway. And I'm like, nah, I see something. It's all the same.
Right.
Now, back then, it was two totally different worlds. You got to remember, like right now, you could be a movie star and do TV, and it is no difference. Back then, they looked down on TV. Mm. You know what I'm saying? They literally like, oh, you're a failure if you're doing, but you like, but I'm making more money than, what are you talking about?
Now, look how times change. It's like TV is running everything.
Time of the TV right now. Feature is not doing really anything.
Yeah, because it's all about like the streaming and like, that shit is taking over.
It's accessibility, you know what I'm saying? Like, the films are still going to be there because there's nothing like a theater experience, especially if you got kids.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they got one of them animation, but you got to take them to see that. And then if it's real big, you got to take them to Universal, Disney, whatever, get on buy all the merch. So that's its own thing. But I think as we've seen, The Woman King,
right?
People just still want to have that movie experience. There's nothing quite like that big of a screen.
Have you seen it yet?
That sound.
I'm going to see it this week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, like I told you, I've been filming, so I haven't seen it yet. Salute to Gina Prince, who directed that joint, obviously Viola. But, you know, so for me back then, my, I would say my cheat code was the casting directors fell in love with me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, I would go in there and rip it, and they were, what I adore about them from that time, like the Deborah Quillers and, like, all of them, you know, they were like, you're not going to get this one.
Right.
But you're in the system, because they knew the politics on the other end, like, they really looking for this, and they just like, this kid is just ripping, and then, you know, the stars got online, and once they did, you know, I never looked back.
Yeah. We talk about that a lot on this podcast because we do like to give a lot of film and TV advice for actors and people in the entertainment industry. Like, that is so key to just, even if you know you're not going to get the role, like, this is not me. I really don't fit this. If you go in and just give it your all, the casting director is going to remember you. And that's the most important part because they'll call
give
you
one
in for
thing
everything.
To remember. Yeah. All you and need to do is give them one thing to remember.
And they look for you.
Right.
They almost, they're casting, quote unquote, directors, but they kind of become like managers and agents.
Right.
Because that's when they hit you like, yo, you have to come in for this. You know what I mean? I know what you can do, but this kid is going to be the next thing, the writer, the director. That's when you start, you know, when you, the thing about acting is like, it's, in a sense, it's much like boxing because it's such a singular thing.
Right.
Right? What people see on screen is like boxers in a gym. We're all working with each other. We sparring this, that, and the other. But what I'm talking about is when them lights is on and that square circle is there, it's just mano y mano. And that's what we're trained like. You know, and then there's layers within that because, you know, you have to respond to your environment. You have to respond to it. And now we're bringing the best out of each other. And that's when it becomes a team sport.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying?
100%.
I love that collaborative like energy. Like, especially when you're working, bro, you need that. You need that energy. It's like we working together. Like we sparring at the same time, but we working together. Like,
only to bring the best out of each
other.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Oh, that's off paper. I ain't know you. So if if I'm rigid and I'm, and, but if we flowing, it's like we both going somewhere else now. And if we have the right director, writer, producers, they can just let it flow. Now you got magic.
We get that a lot, too. Like, we find those moments a lot, like, on our set, because they give us that freedom, so.
Right,
shout
that's dope.
Shout out to our team for giving us that leeway.
Word.
So when do you feel like you're going in auditions and you're locked in? Like, you feel like you're the actor that you want to be, you're on the right track. Like, was there a moment for you, like, oh, I'm, like, in the sweet spot?
That's another great question. For me, you got to understand, I booked my first major film at 17.
Why?
So I was so young, I didn't understand how hard it really is to do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like to be sitting there with like pictures of Cindy from En Vogue on my wall as any other kid at the time. And then 4 months later, it's like, oh, I got to do a love scene with her. It was surreal.
Just you're like, am I really doing this?
Right. Well, no, I'm going to do this.
he's like, wait, this is my job.
But you see what I'm saying? Like, everything was happening so fast, it blinded me to the harsh realities of like, yo, this ain't, like, everybody don't.
Right.
So I'm just thinking, this is normally how it goes because I didn't know any other world, which I look back now and I'm like, oh, that was great because it really helped me build my confidence to those points. Because you know what's ill about that question is, to me, it's like akin to taking a test, right? Or at least from my experience. Like every test that I walked out when I was in school, like, oh, I aced that, I would fail. And then the test that I'm like, no, I'd be like, aced I get it. An A or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think acting is like that, like because the thing is, we can never do it with ego. There's a difference between confidence and ego. And then what I've learned down the line is it obviously it matters what you do. So the only person you have to satisfy is yourself because there's so many variables that go into it. You know, he wore a red shirt. I wanted him to wear a blue shirt. This and that. All of these
people
variables that have nothing to do with your talent from these other people. So it's like all you can do is go lay it down.
And
as long as you satisfy yourself.
Because people going to think what they think anyway, so.
Yeah, and it's art. That's like if we doing a scene, like every time I do a scene, when they're looking at me, like if the director's looking at me, yo, you good? I'm like, are you good? You know, we were filming yesterday. I said something. I was going off the cuff and then went back into the dialogue. We go to do another take. Sasha's like, yo, that was dope what you just said. And I'm like,
What I say? Because yeah. You're just in it.
Because I'm so in it, right, it I don't even remember that. Right. That's not. I'm not sitting here thinking about it like right. that. Because my style is I really like to immerse into the moment. So I don't know what it's almost like. Jazz is how I look at it. Like or hip hop terms is off the top for real. It's not a written freestyle. It's like I'm sitting here really dealing,
giving with, bars off top.
You know, from an emotional level though. You know how we get taught. How to access those emotions, recall, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. You learn that when you coming up. But then there's other levels where it's just like, I am so in this present moment within the skin of this character that I don't need to revisit personal traumas or this, that, and the other to access these emotions. And I'm so in it that it's...
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's right there.
That's the most important part to me about acting. Like, everyone has their own process, but the moment is the most important. If you're truthful, a lot of people think acting is faking it, and it's actually the opposite.
It's, yeah,
acting
being 100%
is
real.
The truth of the moment.
Literally what Berto was saying.
Right. I
mean, you got to be truth, 100% truth.
And it's ill because, you know, my forever best lesson was the experience of filming Juice. My first film with, you know, Tupac Shakur, Ernest Dickerson, Michael Henry Brown co-wrote, like, because Juice, the script for Juice was written 10 years before we did it.
Uh-huh.
So all of the like verbiage and slang in there was
way different from when you
some dudes
it.
From like the 80s and 70s. Hey, you sucker. Hey, you know. And we was like,
the voice.
We was like, nah. Yeah. And so what Ernest was dope, he was just like, you know what needs to be said, just say it the way you would say it. So we basically, me and Pop, like we freestyled the whole movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? So all of these great moments with, you know, even with Pac, the great locker moment and all of that, this is off the top.
Yeah.
So we just flowing and, you know, one of us would sort of anchor it back to the beats, like, I'm going to say this. And it's like, okay, yeah, because we're supposed to go hit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great because it helped me improve my process in terms of being in the moment and not being so rehearsed and this, that, and the other. You know, it's another, this is a cheat code, not a cheat code, it's actually an attribute. Like, don't over-rehearse. Because actors can be so over-rehearsed that if someone says something wrong, it just, instead of, it's not about the line, know what you're supposed to say.
Mm-hmm.
So it might not be exactly what we both read on paper, but I know what I'm supposed to say.
Right.
And now we're flowing, and now, and a lot of times, the writer, the director, they're like, oh, man, that's so much better than that.
Right.
Just leave it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you keep building from there. So,
can't over
you know, I think when it comes back to auditioning, it's like, if as long as you feel good, because it's always a learning experience, you know. Personally, I hate auditioning.
Yeah. You
know, not from an ego perspective, because it's a really odd experience.
Mm-hmm. It's humbling, you know? Too.
It is.
Humbling. It's so humbling, yeah. Auditioning.
Because you asking me to capture this character, in your eyes, mm-hmm. capture this character in 2 minutes.
Right. And I barely got any background on this character, like no history.
Right.
It's just like, I just got to make something out of it.
You don't have the clothes. You don't have the environment.
But you have to create.
Yeah.
Right.
Now we're talking backstory.
Right.
Whether you off or you on, sometimes you could be way off, but the fact that you came in there that committed, like, mm-hmm. yo, Dukes was dressed like this. He came in with the... He had a sugar cane stick and mm-hmm. all of this. And it's like, that's not who this guy is. But I don't know that. I ain't read the script. But you seeing where I'm able to go.
Putting my effort.
You know what I mean? And when you get, like, good collaborative creators, they might pull you to the side. Hey, you know, try like this or this, that. Or they might give you that one gem. Yo, this dude just came back from war.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he came back and his sister's pregnant. And just that one thing.
Yeah, and those like, few words is all you need.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. This is why I tell a lot of people to go in and don't try and do what they want you to do, because you're just going to be kind of in the, like, copying what everyone else is doing and kind of what we think this character is. Do what you want to do. Do what you think this character would do, and then let them move it. But go for what you have created.
Because
if you're trying to, like, be something that isn't what you...
Out.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. not going to
You
got
to let it happen organically.
Right.
And be true. And, you know, there's a balance, right? Like, if it's a comedy, you got to be funny.
Right.
But funny has many layers, right? There's, like, dry funny. There's, like, you know, you know, physical funny or whatever. But to your point, it's like, you know, going back to Juice, there's a lot of lessons in that now that I think about it, that I'm thinking about in the moment.
Right.
But it's like, because we went on, like, 4 callbacks or whatever. Because at, like, the 4th or 5th one, whatever, because it's an ensemble, right? So it's four dudes. So now we're going in and they're like, okay, you read with him and read this chemistry. Character. And they're switching chemistry. There you go. So they're trying to figure it out. So now they say, hey, we're going to take everybody out to dinner. And it was eight of us. And my manager hits me at the time. Well, no, my agent at the time hits me. And she's like, you know, okay, you got to go to this dinner, this, that, and the other. But they really like this one guy. I know that for sure. I got the inside track. This guy's name is Tupac Shakur. And I'm like, what's a Tupac Shakur?
Tupac Shakur.
And so she's like, when you go to this dinner, make sure you sit next to him.
Yeah.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, of course, I go to the dinner. We sit on opposite sides of the table. Organically, though.
Right.
You know what I mean? But the conversation's flowing. Because to your point, it's like, to piggyback on what you just said, like, it's more about just... It, yeah, do what you want to do, but let things happen organically.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, me and Pac gel like that because neither one of us was trying.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We're just being who we are in that moment. We're not thinking strategically like, oh, this is the dinner to get the movie and I got to, you know, gussy up to this one.
That's
or
what
this
people
is the
be
producer.
Going wrong. That's right. What people be going wrong.
That's know? Where they go wrong.
So yeah. You knew who he was when you sat down at the table.
I mean, I guess that's the...
Tupac guy.
Right.
I didn't know who he was. Right. Like, at the time, this was right before... Like, I think he was, like, Digital Underground's roadie at the time. So, like, his... Like, he hadn't put any music out yet.
Right.
He was just... He hadn't had a record deal yet. You know what I mean? But
crazy.
He was, like, on tour with Digital Underground at the time. But you got to remember, there ain't no social media. There ain't none of that. So, I didn't know that, being in Brooklyn, 17. I'm like... You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, it was just like...
Crazy.
So, I get the call the day after the dinner...
Did you sit next to Tupac Shakur?
And I'm like, nah, we was opposite ends of the table, but we had good convo when it came up and this, that, and the other. And then I got that call that changed my life, you know, from Ernest Dickerson.
So that movie comes out, everything changes.
Yeah.
People start recognizing you, you get more, you know, roles, you start auditioning for more stuff, or is it still a slow climb?
Well, it's a trippy situation, right? So remember, I told you I went to performing arts. So, and this is another thing. We all, as artists, art has many different forms. So like I just told you, from young, I was spitting and, you know, trying poetry. To do this. At one point, I wanted to be Big Daddy Kane. The next day, I wanted to be Bobby Brown, right? So while we were doing Juice, Latifah was in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, she was playing this. She had signed a new group or whatever, and she was playing a demo. Every day in the trailer, playing this demo. And now, at the time, some guys I went to high school with, we had a singing group called Vision. So I'm like, oh, we kill these dudes. Like, so one day, again, being so young,
right.
I go up to Queen Latifah. And I'm like, yo, my group will murder these dudes. And she's like, what?
Turn that shit up.
You know what I'm saying? And I was able to get, like, because we were a five-man group, and I was able to get, like, two of them extra roles, you know, on the set. So
that's tough.
You know what I mean?
That's
so tough. They would be there. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get up. Can we sing for you tomorrow? And this was right before the scene in Juice where Q goes to the club to try to get her, because she managed the club. And he's like, yo, I got a DJ, you know. This was right before we filmed that scene. And we were in the stairwell, and the other two dudes that came up, and we sang a cappella for her. And Queen Latifah started crying. She was like, yo, we got to work together. I'm going on tour this summer. So getting back to your Juice question, like when it came out, everything changed. I ended up being on tour with Queen Latifah before the movie came out. As like a backup dancer and singer with two of my other guys in the group. So I'm not, it's an, and when you add that with there's no social media and the immediacy of things, it's not really connecting for me. I know I got this movie coming out, but I don't even know what that feels like. So then I get off the tour, right when I get off the tour, the movie comes out.
People going crazy.
Like it's crazy when they were showing like trailers and stuff like that for the movie was right at the end of the tour. We had did the Apollo. Theater when I was dancing for Latifah, and there was only a couple of people in the crowd looking like, yo, that looked like money from the trail I just saw in the movie. Why is he up here dancing for, you know what I mean? And so all of that to me is like, those are gems, man. It was so, so dope because it was just such a dope time.
That's fire. You would never know that. That's lit. It was a tour right before the movie.
And then it came out, and everything changed
and then,
because,
boom.
You know, I think that One of the things I don't like about social media is that it makes art too disposable.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that to say, like, you know, we come from a generation where we would watch something over and over. Like Biggie said, let my tape rock till my tape pop. That's real talk.
Right.
Like, you love this thing so much and you just keep revisiting it. Now, it's almost like there's too many options. Right. So then
there's
what
too
do
much.
You love?
Your attention span is like, I gotta go from this to this to this. Yeah, that is a
fact. You know what I'm saying? Because you gotta love saturation. The thing. Like, what do you, you know, what's the designer? What's the song? What's the movie? This is kind of what pushes us. The things that it's like are forever parts of your childhood or your upbringing or new things that you discover. You know, it seems like that's sort of dissipating, you know?
Right.
And I know in the younger generation, they're programmed like that, so it ain't nothing to them.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's how they was brought up, so it don't even feel different. Yeah,
but as they get older, they start to latch on to, like, what's a good example? The rock group, The Grateful Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Grateful Dead.
What was ill about them is they have 3-4 generations. The grandparent done put the parent on to the, with the parents putting their kid on, and then they all go to the concert together, and these dudes is in their 50s, 60s still, you know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas in the culture, it's like, you know, it's just there and all right, after
a few
months or whatever.
Something new.
But it's art, and art lives on forever, you know what I mean? So that's kind of, I still work from that that mandate of rhythm. Like, we gotta, because the only ability that we have truly as artists is to transcend time. You know what I mean?
Right,
we can affect moments, but when that moment leaps to another generation, now it has a whole new life.
Yeah.
And that's not, I'm not saying chase that, but that we have that capability. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just films off the top of my mind, whether it's The Godfather or I don't know, Black Panther, or, you know, it could anything you could think of that it just transcends time itself. New generations keep wanting to see this, dissect this, and it's affecting the human experience in the same way that it was originally constructed.
Right.
That's incredible.
Shawshank.
Shawshank. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting because a lot of, I feel like hip hop artists have a shelf life now in a way where after 3 years, people are like, okay, we heard what you had to say. The next, let's listen to the next dude. Let's listen to Lil Baby now. Like, and then in 3 years, it's going to be like, that is really interesting to think about. And also to that point, TikTok, like people are making great art on TikTok, which is wild to say, but there's some like actual great productions that people do on there. So a lot of that is kind of like, oh, cool, this was great, and people don't even care anymore.
Yeah, because they're like, just what's the next one?
Though? Right, let me watch the next one. So yeah, a lot of the art is disposable. That's so interesting to think
about. Keeping your longevity is tough nowadays, you know what I'm saying? So if you got something and it really hit, that means you got something on your hands, because it's so much for people to watch, so much for people to take in. It's like, it's hard to latch on to something. So if you do latch on to something, if you make something that people can latch on to, then hats off to you, because it's so much. It's a lot of saturation nowadays, for real.
Absolutely. Saturation. That's a great word. And also, listen, we're human beings. We play the long form game. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's cool to do whatever platform it is, right? But, like, let's just use being a comedian, for example. Anybody could make somebody laugh at some point, like 2 or 3 minutes. Go talk to a room full of people, all different ages, from all different backgrounds,
that you know, all sizes, different
shapes, and colors, and make them laugh at the same things for an hour.
Right.
That's different.
Right.
That's different than skits. And I'm not, no disrespect to the people who, that's how they making their come up now. It's a new format. No disrespect to them, but it's the same way as, like, you know, yo, let's do this joint right here. All right, cool. Now let's keep their attention for 2 hours in a movie or hour on a TV show. That's a whole different. Mm-hmm. That's a different format. But it all goes back to the beginning, you know, even before all of us. It's like plays. Like, what were they? They were depictions of what was really going on. Some of them were fictional. Some of them were, yo, if we just went to war in this village and we survived and this, that, and the other, and then you want to do a play about it to unpack it for the newer generations coming. Yo, this is why we have this statue here. We wear this clothing because they did this to us and da da da. You know, it's like, it comes from a real place, what we do, you know, and that's why art is powerful. You know what I mean? Whether it's a film or a song, you could hear a song, start laughing. You could hear a song, start crying.
Mm-hmm.
Takes you back to that, of like, it's such a visceral experience, you know. You could smell the room. You could you remember what you ate that day, what you had on, like, you know?
I smelled, I like, this is mad random, but the, like, yesterday I was walking and I literally smelled, I don't know where I was, I just smelled something and that shit broke me back like 10 years. I'm like, yo, like, it reminded me of a time, like, I can't even explain the time, like, unless I smell that smell again. Like, it was mad weird.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It was so weird, but I was like, yo, what the fuck? I was mad, like, it was a weird ass experience.
But that see, was that, mad random. You know, that's ill what you're saying because that's art. Whether you smell the food, food is art, right? And it's constructed that way for that purpose. Not to just taste good, but it has to have smell a certain good. Color, look texture, good. You know?
Yeah.
And when we add all of those things in, you know, it's like, again, then it goes to now we're transcending time itself, you know? So knowing that we have that capability, you know, for the younger artists that are coming up, use the tools that are here now, but study the craft of what you're doing, whatever that is, whether you in audio, whether it's visual, whether it's the technical part, whatever it is, you know, because in the business is really interesting. It's like most, you know, writers are like failed directors, or most, you know, directors were failed actors. And it's like, but they found enough. If you were an athlete, it's like, I, you know what I'm saying? You're not 6'7", but your body is crazy.
Mm-hmm. You got
and
bounce.
You know what I mean? So now you become a trainer, or some people have the mindset. They could become a coach, or you still are feeding your passion. It's just learning that in a different way.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a fact. So Juice comes out. You go from auditioning for, as actors, we audition for everything and anything at first.
Yeah.
Now you get to start selecting stuff and reading scripts.
Nah,
is that how?
No, not yet? I was auditioning for years and years for everything that I was doing.
Right.
I kind of was fortunate in that. So the second film that I did was a football movie called The Program that David Ward wrote and directed. And James Caan was in it. It was just like, again, it's like, it was surreal to me. I'm just like,
rest in peace, just passed.
Yeah, rest in peace, James Caan. Yeah. Salute to that man. He was a heck of an individual.
I heard he's a character. I heard he's crazy.
Yeah. But so bringing that up to say, so at the time, Major League, the film, was this massive hit, right?
Yeah.
David Ward wrote and directed that. So while we're doing the program, he's like, yo, I'm about to do a sequel to that. And at the time, Wesley Snipes was the dude in that. And I'm like, well, nah, I can't. You doing that with Wesley? And he was like, yeah, I don't think the deal is going to happen. And I didn't want to do it because Wesley's like one of my hit. And I'm like, but I also, I'm in the audience. Like, if I saw me playing, like, hold up, this not going to fit.
Right, right.
And I was aware of that, but I'm a loyal dude. And I was just so thankful for another, like, yo, Deuce just gave me my second opportunity. Now he's in need. So what am I going to do? You know what I mean? And it was just like, you know what? Just take the ride, see what happens. Again, I like to be in, it's like, not going off topic, but people ask me this a lot about when I read scripts. When I read scripts, the last thing I'm thinking about is the character they're interested in me for. When I read a script, it's like going to a movie. In my head, it's like I'm in a movie. So I have the same opinions I would have about watching any movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where my notes and things like that come from. And then I have to read it again to look through the lens of this specific character, because I need to know how it's... So it was the same way with that, like...
Because if you first read, like, try to read through the character, it's like, you're going to miss out on a whole lot. Like,
but then it's not a democracy, right? We're all beholden to the story. Whatever's best for the story. What we can find in between that for the particular character, you got to get a skill with that, right? Because what a lot of actors don't understand is that this whole sweater is woven together. You pull this one thread here.
Whole shift.
So now something you want to change on page 5, you don't realize affects page 58.
Right.
Once you understand story science, now you become smarter. And you can, now you see what makes sense. Nah, I have to say this here because that affects this.
Mm-hmm.
But then if I do it like this, it won't affect that. And now, and it's a collaborative process. Mm-hmm. So I was only saying that to say when I read Major League 2 and I already saw one, I was like, I mean, all right, let's roll the dice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and then, you know, and, but I kept working. I think consistency is key as well.
Of course.
You know, and that's a real key to this thing. It's like, you got to be consistent. It's not about doing what you did yesterday. You know what I mean? It's about trying to constantly ascend. And sometimes, and this is where it gets tricky, because you could do a film that makes all of this money and now you're getting paid this and you don't see the jewel in this thing over mm-hmm. here that you know is not going to make that amount of money, but now you're able to show a different texture and a different layer. And you never know the other attachments that come with it, right. You know? This kid right here that nobody knows could be the next guy in 2 years.
Right.
And you took a shot with him in something that at the time you know what? Let's go do this thing. And people see that type of track. Because now you got a flow. You're not just one level. You know what I'm saying? You got a whole flow to your game. So, one of my, I guess you could call it a tactic, is I like to be unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I say that. So let's skip forward. For my career at the point that I'm talking about, nobody saw me doing house.
Right.
Nobody.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
At all. And I was aware of that, you know, and a lot of people don't know. Like, I had a chance to do either House or Grey's Anatomy. And for me, House was so much more of a gamble
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that I was like, I'd rather fail doing this than, and this is no disrespect at all to Grey's Anatomy. I saw what House ended up becoming before it was that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just such a, I mean, the lead character was an anti-hero.
Yeah.
He was rude. He was all of these things that didn't exist on television at the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was just so like, you know, new, what?
Something refreshing for the people.
Yeah. And let's ride this wave. And again, that's when TV, it's not like it is now. Mm. That was kind of a, you doing TV?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you the movie dude. And I'm like, yeah, exactly. Mm. To throw people off. Now, then they get to, oh, you're an artist.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Hey, you just did what you wanted to do. You didn't let anything dictate you, which, like you said earlier, sometimes people will go, oh, I want to do this studio movie because it's a studio movie, because it's getting me paid this, and they miss out on that indie jewel that could take you into the stratosphere above that
exactly.
studio movie.
Literally what 50 be telling me all the time, don't feel too entitled to where you deprive yourself of other shit.
Right. Yep.
That's a fact.
Is a fact.
Yeah.
That's a fact. And it's just, you know, the more we do it, like I say, study the craft. You know, read, you know these different eras. And because we're in the era now is really interesting. There's no, like, what's a genre now? Like, everything is the same thing, but it's not going to be like that forever.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? I think about these things. I like to at least try to have predictive thinking. So let's go back to when we talk about TikTok and all of that. That's not going to be here in 7 years, 8 years, 9 years. Because there are kids, that everything that's popular, the young demographic naturally hates it. Everybody's doing that, I'm doing this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Even though Zuckerberg was able to pivot with Facebook, I remember the moment where it was like, wait a minute, I'm on the same site as my parents?
Yeah,
I'm out.
We out to Twitter. We out to Twitter now.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a fact.
So there's always going to be an ebb and flow in that. So I say, use these new tools for what they're worth, but don't become beholden to them. Don't let your craft
depend on them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Don't let your craft depend on that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Let it always let it depend on you. Like,
let it be another tool to
LeBron.
Show your craft.
You know what I'm saying? People, LeBron fans. Mm. So yeah, he's with Cleveland, but then all right, he's at the Lakers. Now I'm Lakers, like, because I'm a LeBron fan.
Right. Yeah.
For me, it was MJ. Like, I love LeBron, so where he's at, I'm at. But MJ was the first version of that for me, even though he spent most of his time in Chicago. You know what I'm saying?
He was like,
I'm MJ'd out.
Yeah.
What we going to do?
That's like me with Brady right now. I'm a Buccaneer fan until he retires, right?
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, get like that.
So you do how many seasons of House?
We did eight.
Eight seasons. That show was a massive hit.
Yeah.
And what do you do after that? Like, what's like the next thing for you? Are you trying to do something different? Are you trying to go back to movies? Like, what's in your mind?
You know, I was just open. Right. I kind of have a reverse engineer. Like, if someone says, "Who do you want to work with?" I'm like, that's too big of a thought for me. I'm just open, and then it flows. Not everybody has their, you know, whatever. I would love to dance with Denzel or Leo. I would love that, right? Mm. But I just more leave myself open because I don't know what it's going to be. And that's that other, again, come back to that competitive part where it's just like, because I want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So in order to do that, I got to carve a path that's never existed before. You know, so after House was great for me on so many levels because it taught me, I look at House like grad school. Like, oh, this is how you create this stuff.
Right.
From the producing level, the creative, this is how you have a consistency of, right. you know, and so now in my writing and producing career started to get, you know, that ball rolling and I was leaning more towards there. Not more towards, that's not fair to say. I was just leaning into it more. Mm. And so now it's like, all right, how do we get these moving simultaneously?
Yeah.
You know, so I think after that I did a show on ABC called Resurrection
mm-hmm.
that people loved. They had some behind the scenes problems that went away. I think then we ended up doing Shooter. I'm doing like more indie films in right. between then, but also everything's in the flux of changing.
Right.
Now social media is becoming a platform. Now this is becoming a, you know, I remember when Twitter first came out and everybody was like, what's this?
Yeah.
And I got it. Because I took the Dame Dash mind frame like, oh, direct-to-consumer, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And we saw media, traditional media,
switch over, yeah.
start to change or have to change, like the music business did when Napster first came around.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I think staying fluid in your mind and but staying centered in your art is the way to go. You know what I mean? Because rather ask me what I don't want to, what I want to do, ask me what I don't want to do.
Right.
Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. And then I can give you a more concrete answer, but that starts with self. So you see what I'm saying? So I just stayed open, and now we come around to something like Raising Kanan.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? So let's get into that. Let's get into a little bit of Raising Kanan. So you read that script. Obviously, the script was sent to you.
Yeah.
And what's your initial reaction?
I thought it was dope. Like when I first read it, again, being an audience member, I'm like, oh, this could have legs, because 50 did such a good job, and the writers, all of them, Courtney, like, Kanan was such a despicable monster that I thought there was a brilliance in unpacking how someone could become like that.
100%. That's mm-hmm. the whole reason I'm tuned in every mm-hmm. week. I'm like,
literally. You know, because yeah. now it broadens. We all start from somewhere, and we're all, to a degree, products of our environment, but then we make choices along the way that contribute. So specifically for the power universe, you know, there's all these moving parts and stuff like this. And I was like, this is unique because it's the origin story of a really evil dude.
Right, right.
And to start with, he's just like
innocent kid, going to school.
Chilling. And you see that his mom's is the...
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's like, whoa.
Oh, I'm in. I'm watching this. Like, yeah. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Did you watch the original Power before before you read Kanan?
Yeah. I was a fan of Power like anybody else. Right. Well, millions of people.
Right.
You know? So I was like, and then I had a conversation with Sasha because my main thing was like, where's it going?
Right.
You know, obviously they're going to give you a half and half. And the rest yeah. is like, we don't know, you know? And I was like, yo, let's rock. Once I heard Patina Miller was playing rock, now I'm really in. Now I got my foot on the gas pedal.
She's
let's speed
elite.
To the destination.
She's yeah. too elite. She's,
yeah.
How did you know her? Did you know her from Broadway? Did you know her from Madam Secretary?
I knew of her, obviously, Madam Secretary.
Right.
I think less about seeing what she'd done and having read this role, knowing that she's going to attack that.
Right.
It just was like, oh, okay, this is going to be something. Mm-hmm. You know, and then obviously Makai and everyone else comes on, Malcolm Mays, London, like, you know, Haley Kilgore, like it, and you know what's so fun about it, man? It's one of those vibes on set. Like it really, everybody's gelled. You know, it's not one of the you going to work sets. You know, for actors out there, I mean, it is a business. Sometimes you go to work,
might punch in, punch out, but
yeah. you know,
I feel like I don't know. I got that on the when I was on the original Power when we were Ghost. I feel like all the Power sets are just like that. There's just a family, and mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a testament to what 50 and Courtney has done, but
exactly.
I feel like, yeah, those
that's what
the
I was
Power
say
sets
that.
Are different.
Yeah, the environment is set such a way, it's just like, it's impossible to not feel like a family. Like, it's just like, it's just that energy, bro, that collaborative energy. Everybody's mm-hmm. just happy to be working. Like, all of that shit goes hand in hand. Yeah. It just creates magic.
And it does come from the top down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's how those environments are created. Because what we're used to is like there's this separation, right? There's like the executives, mm-hmm. there's the crew, and then there's the cast. Mm-hmm. And each tribe looks out for each other. Mm-hmm. And then you get those rare occasions where, you know, like what we're talking about, but that comes from the top down. That comes from Courtney mm-hmm. setting the standard in the writer's room and also being a bridge between that and the executives. And obviously everybody's looking then don't nobody want to piss off 50. Right. You know what I mean? So if he's like, yo, I want this kid.
I don't want to end up on IG.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Which lends itself once you skip to the cast. You know, we a tribe. We got to take care of each other. We got to, you know, but it's just really dope. Like, it just makes for the workflow. You know, when you have the hard days, it ain't really that hard.
Exactly.
You know, you know, the grip guy, you remember, oh, yo, how's your daughter doing? Mm-hmm. She sprained her ankle. You know, those little human things. Yeah. Now everybody's pouring back in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I was just going to say that because Power was the first set that I was ever on. That lunch, there's a writer, a grip guy, a sound guy, an actor, and this all at the same table. Mm-hmm. Right. Usually when you go on a project, the actors sit together. Oh, no, we sit together. Or the grip sit together, this and that. Yeah. Every time we go to lunch,
everybody's sitting with each other. Yeah. Like, every day is someone sitting with someone new. Like,
and that's
everyone's just chopping it up. Like,
that's dope.
It's a true testament of what they've done. So you read the script, you love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a straight offer, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, I spoke to Sasha, and he was like, this is what I want to do with it. This is what I see, you know, and I was like, I gave him like kind of nuggets of how I saw the character.
Right.
I was really interested in playing the character. I mean, he's a pretty dark dude, but he's interesting to me. And I feel like, okay, how do I make this guy, how do I make you empathize with this guy?
Right.
I always feel like the best villains you feel sorry for, like, mm-hmm, you're like, you know, he was doing it for his country. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
He had a reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had a reason.
Like Ghost. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. So it was like, how do I find that element and then just go on this ride, because what really drew me in was the backstory that we started playing with. I was like, oh yeah, now we're gonna be good.
Yeah,
because there's just so many layers and all of that.
Towards the end of the first season, I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah,
this is what?
Yeah. And you know what's crazy is he still technically doesn't know. Me and Patina were just talking about this because she was like, nah, because he got the. I was like, she probably thinking, is this paternity test real? Because dude is so shiesty.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's not, like, he wouldn't do something like that.
Right.
So it's like, you technically still don't know. And so to me, that'll make it interesting for the viewer to see how we unpack season two, because it's like he's trying to get her to cement it, and she won't.
She not with it.
But then she's like, whatever the truth is, she knows it.
Yeah.
So it's like she's forced to deal with him because he done convinced this boy that that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like dancing in that gray area.
It's great storytelling.
Yeah.
It's great storytelling. Right.
She got to step in.
You don't have to answer this because I know a lot of actors, sometimes, you know, they like to keep it close to the vest, but what's your process for Detective Howard, like, specifically? Like, is there something that you do with an actor the night before? Do you kind of just let it rock the day of? Like,
good question. So my process is, you know, my first thing that I attack is backstory. Mm-hmm. Who is this person? I have to build out an entire universe. I got to know what's his favorite food, what's his worst hated color, and why. Everything has to have a reason. You can't just pick a thing. Oh, he's a Taurus.
Right.
Why are you picking that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try to go as far as my mind can take me. Then I go back into the mythology of the actual story. And, you know, to me, like, what's interesting about Howard that I think a lot of people don't, I think it's going over their heads, is like everything that we've been talking about, especially like black and brown people when it comes to law enforcement, and it should be people from our communities policing us. Howard is that.
Right.
He comes from the hood. So that's what makes him dangerous, because when he's in the department, yeah, he police, but he could go places where y'all can't go. Mm-hmm. He could talk to people y'all can't talk to, because he grew up with their mothers and daddies and uncles and aunties. Mm-hmm. But then that makes him dangerous on the street because he police.
Yeah, he could
ride you on. Let me get with dudes when you know his intentions.
It's risky over there.
And he's just playing it all both sides for
that's smooth. It,
right. That's the most dangerous cop there is.
Right. And it's pun intended, because he's consumed with power. Mm-hmm. Power is the only thing on this earth that's more powerful than money. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it could be it's a person that's in a lesser position in terms of, like, this person has more money, but this person has the power to take that out.
To change your life. Right. To take your life from you.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that is a fact.
So he's in that sort of zeitgeist. And then, you know, in terms of, like, the daily process, like, I can't memorize lines a week before. It just won't stick.
Same.
That's just my process. Mm-hmm. Like, the first person that I ever met that had the same process was Hugh Laurie, ironically enough.
Mm.
we were on set one day and, you know, people, I mean, I don't, not everybody has their own process. Sometimes you gotta be reading this and read, it just won't stick for me. I tried that, I was trained that way, and I used to have problems. Like, and then it's like the difference between writing a rap and writing it in your head. Mm-hmm. That's the best correlation I could make. You know what I mean? Right. And once I figured out, oh, this works for me, now I'm able to play.
Right.
Because the last thing I'm thinking about is the words.
Right.
I'm keyed into everything else. Emotion.
Right. It's freedom in that.
So I'm just like, you know, on my Rain Man shit.
And no matter where you go, you're still getting the point across, no matter which direction you go, because you know what the intentions are.
But the challenge of that, like, so if you're doing a show like a house, you can't freestyle medical terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
That is what it is. Right. For this, everything, like I said, that sweater is woven together intentionally, like that's what it is, period. So now you got to work a different part of the muscle. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I would get all of that down in a process like that. So now I'm more keyed into the relationships that the character is having that have nothing to do with the medical stuff. Let me find my freedom in that. And this makes it easy to be like, it's not lupus. You know what I'm saying? Right, it's tachycardia. You know what I mean? I'm not caught up in the... Because my thing wasn't like, damn, this is a crazy word. My thing was like, what does that mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that opened up a whole different matrix, because obviously we had like consultants and people on high levels at a doctor, mm-hmm. ex-doctors, whatever. So when they would break down like, oh, this is the medical condition that the person's having. Now I'm not thinking about it as a word. It's like, oh, this person fell on their arm, which caused a clot to go. Like I'm seeing a whole different process in the way that they would see it, but how it translates to me that. Then I got to say it's tachycardia.
Okay. He's having a heart attack.
You know what I mean? So it just made the process.
I love his doctor voice.
Yeah, yeah. Doctor voice is tough.
Got to be rigid.
He's having a heart attack.
All right, let's get into some fan questions and we'll get you out of here. Our first question is from Alicia Sine, and she asks, what do you enjoy most about acting? I saw this question. I was like, I need to know his answer to this. Wow.
That's a great question. You know, this might not... that you can do it as long as you're here, and that it truly is like wine, in that you get better the more life you live.
That is a fact.
Period.
Right. You can act forever. You only experience more and more as you go.
People think Morgan Freeman just started acting when he was in his 40s or something. The dude's been acting the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
He just took off when it took off, and he was an older man. So yep. We can do this forever.
I'm curious, what's your favorite movie? Do you have one?
Ever in life?
Can you do that?
I mean, it's a long... Yeah, I can. Yeah.
It's hard.
It's a very long list, but mine I know is going to surprise both of y'all. My favorite movie of all time is The Wiz.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, the one with Diana Ross, Michael Jackson. That's my favorite movie since I was a kid.
Damn.
And I forced it to be my kids' favorite movie.
Oh, really?
Because they had to watch it like 5 times a year their whole existence.
They hate it. They don't want to tell you they hate it. They're like, Dad, not again.
Nah, I catch them in the bathroom singing. And I'm like, got him.
Yes. Mission complete. All right, so Legacy for Xavier asks, what has been your most challenging character to play in your career?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. Ooh. I would say to that, every character presents its own challenge. Mm-hmm. Honestly, not trying to be politically correct or anything like that. Like, I did a film called Breakfast of Champions with Bruce Willis. It was based on this Kurt Vonnegut book. That was a really challenging
right.
Character, because, one, it's set on this book, and the characters is not written color specific, let's say. Yeah. And so I get the opportunity, I go in there, and it's a very quirky movie. Mm-hmm. Like Michael Clark Duncan was in it. It was just like this like motley crew of cast, and people really haven't seen my like comedic layer. Mm. So I was just trying to lean into that, but in this very sort of dark movie, that was pretty challenging. But I think every character is challenging, and that what they say is true. If you got 2 lines or 200 lines, it's the same rules apply.
Right.
That's right. A fact.
All right, so Rashad Hunter asks, if you could time travel to 18 years old, what's a critical industry gem you'd tell yourself?
Save your money. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a business. Like, learn the business.
Right.
That's what I would tell my 18-year-old self. Learn the business. You know what I'm saying? You could splurge here, but put that away. You know.
Keep some in the tuck.
And learn business. Right. You know, it's like right now... you know, these the younger generation has so many opportunities that we didn't have.
Whether so it's, many resources.
Yeah, it's merch, it's walkthroughs, it's all this stuff that didn't exist.
Insane.
We got two this weekend. Two walkthroughs this weekend.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. That didn't exist back then. You had the one thing. You show up to set, you got to pay these. You got to pay lawyer, manager, agent.
Yep.
Business manager,
get the percentages
like,
out the way.
Yeah, that's every dollar. That's not even taxes yet.
Right. Yeah, and then you, oh my God. Yeah, yeah, we don't even want to talk about taxes.
Always pay your taxes.
Yeah, yeah, pay your taxes.
Also, speaking of merch, thanks, Omar, for crew has it merch? Is, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
It is with the plug.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Like,
no doubt.
This is crazy.
Y'all gonna learn a lot from watching this. If you ain't learned something, if you got to this point and didn't learn something, I don't know, you gotta fix something in your head, in your ears or something, because there's a lot of information in this.
I just wanna say for both of y'all, I'm proud of y'all, you know what I'm saying? Like, for real, you know what I mean? I'm a fan, I may not say a lot, but I watch it all. And this is a dope vibe right here, you know, because it's like, it's almost like the actor studio type of vibe for a younger generation. Right. You know what I'm saying?
I'm getting goosebumps. This is crazy.
Yeah, bro.
You know?
That's crazy.
And I think that's important, you know, because, you know, the younger generation, a lot of, and I'm saying this to say, because it's not their fault, right? If we were born at this time, we would just think certain things are normal that are really trendy. You don't want to be the trend. You want to set the trend.
Set the trend.
And you keep resetting the trend.
Right.
You know, in your own way. So I just wanted to say I'm proud of y'all, man. This is dope.
Love, like,
thank you, Omar.
No doubt.
I really appreciate it. So by the time this comes out, it'll be around the finale of Raising Kanan. So make sure you check out Raising Kanan if you're not tapped in already.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Plug everything you got, anything, social media, all that.
Oh, yeah. Social media is at Omar Epps, everything. Pick up the new book, Nubia. This is my second book, my first novel. It's a young adult sci-fi novel, Afrofuturistic.
Oh, damn, so, I gotta read that.
Yeah. Check that out. Everywhere books are sold. And we cooking.
Yeah.
You know, we cooking.
We cooking, baby. We're in the kitchen. Instagram is where's22/MichaelRainey Jr. Depending on how you're feeling, you can follow whatever one. TikTok, where's22. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, where's22. We got vlogs, crazy content.
What's the 22?
So basically, I'm making sure my favorite number is the number 2 because my mom's birthday is February 2nd. That's 2-2. When I used to play basketball, I used to wear the number 2 or 11 a lot. Mm. And 1-1 equals 2. You feel me? So like everything like is just like 2s for me. I see the number 2 a lot. I see the number 22 a lot. And then like my friends just started calling me 22. And then, like,
that's dope.
Yeah. So it just became my nickname. And like,
that stuck out to me because when I played football, my first number was 81, but then I had 22.
Right.
So
yeah.
I was like 22.
Yeah.
And weirdly enough, when I grew up, 22 was my number for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So when we met each other, that's our business name, 22
Entertainment.
22 Entertainment.
That's dope. Yeah.
So yeah,
that's just like that number's super special to me, man. Yeah. That's so. Yeah.
Okay. We're in there, stage 22. Make sure you follow Gianni V. Paolo, Instagram, TikTok. Check out Raising Kanan. Subscribe to the Where's 22 channel. We got Crew Has It merch. Omar plugged in.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Michael. Give us one.
Listen, man, the crew has it. We just had the legend Omar Epps.
Dude, this was crazy.
This is unbelievable, salute. Man. This is incredible.
Thank you, Omar.
Man.
Thank you for coming on.
Appreciate you.
No doubt, man. Appreciate you.
That's love.
That was crazy.
Iconic.
Thank you so much. We appreciate
that's
it.
Love, bro. I appreciate that.
We'll get up.